It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A, but unfortunately, we don't get Dr. Mitch live with us today. He had to take today off to do some family stuff, going to one of his kids' high school presentations. So being a good dad as well as a good marijuana researcher. But that doesn't mean we don't have some cannabis science to talk about. I've got some stories here lined up that will give us a good look at what's happening here in the world of marijuana research. Today, in the Journal of Analytical Toxicology, there is a new report out, a new study, entitled Plasma Cannabinoid Pharmacokinetics After Controlled Smoking and Ad Libitum Cannabis Smoking in Chronic Frequent Users. Just to translate that from scientific to English, they took a look at a bunch of potheads to figure out how long pot stays in their system. That's basically what this study found out. They were taking a look at the main psychoactive constituent, which is delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, what we just call THC, as well as 11-hydroxy-THC. That's another form of THC that's formed when you ingest marijuana. It's formed with your gut enzymes. And then the inactive marijuana metabolite, which is technically known as 11-nor-9-carboxy-THC, or short, we just call it carboxy-THC. So they got 11 chronic frequent cannabis smokers, people that smoke often and smoke a lot and have done so for a long time. They got 11 of these guys onto a closed research unit, unlimited access to THC cannabis cigarettes at 5.9% THC. Not the strongest joints out there. Pretty low in the legalized states, as a matter of fact. We'd be bummed if a joint was less than 18%, but still, 6% THC joints that they've got. And part of the reason for that is they have to get their research marijuana from El Soli's lab there at the University of Mississippi, the federal government's pot farm, which notoriously makes some pretty shitty marijuana. Nonetheless, they've got unlimited joints. They can smoke as much as they want. And that's what you mean by ad libitum. They just means ad lib, whenever you want to, right? So you got these guys smoking pot, 11 cannabis consumers, and they monitored them in a closed research setting. So they couldn't get out, couldn't get anything anywhere else, from noon to 11 p.m. during two smoking phases. And that was followed by 5 days of abstinence among seven of them. So seven out of the 11 smoked, all 11 of them smoked a ton of pot. Then they took seven of them and made them stop for 5 days. The other four could keep smoking. You got to have controls, right? So those, I assume those are the controls, but they had seven of them cold turkey stop for 5 days, observed. No way that they had smoked any pot. Then they did the gas chromatography. They did the study on their THC and their metabolites that they would find. And they found that all 11 participants were THC and carboxy THC positive. Frequent chronic cannabis consumers, 5 days of abstinence, 5 days later, still positive for active THC and carboxy THC metabolites. So all of these zero tolerance laws in places like Georgia and Iowa for driving, or nanogram tolerances in Colorado or Washington, are catching people who could have been people like me who smoke all the time. Even after 5 days of sobriety, they're going to catch these guys. And 58.3% of them had THC that was greater than 5 nanograms. And 79.2% were positive for the carboxy THC 8 to 14 hours after their last cannabis smoking. So if I stopped right now, they're telling me I couldn't drive until midnight in Washington State. Cannabinoid detection rates in seven of the participants for 4 to 5 days after last smoking were 92.9% positive for THC and 100% positive for metabolites. And that's at detecting at half a nanogram the very lowest that can be detected by science. Now, Hi in Hawaii in the chat room asks, how long did they smoke every day? Doesn't say. It's ad libitum, which means they could have smoked one joint that day. They could have smoked five joints an hour. We don't know. But, and how much did they, what was the qualification for them to be considered frequent chronic smokers? I don't know. I'm only looking at the abstract. I don't have the full paper yet. And that's what I'm hoping I can get from Dr. Mitch. But basically this tells us that frequent, and this is their final sentence in the abstract, the chronic frequent cannabis smokers exhibited extended detection windows for plasma cannabinoids reflecting a large cannabinoid body burden. So all of these laws that are trying to set us up based on metabolites or even active THC are discriminatory against the frequent cannabis consumer. Now, in other news, Yahoo News is reporting that a marijuana study reveals teens' surprising views of the drug. And this research says that the disapproval of marijuana use has actually increased among adolescents aged 12 to 14. In 2013, 79% of kids 12 to 14 years old said they strongly disapproved of people smoking pot. That's up from 74%. The finding was surprising given the growing legalization of the drug, said Christopher Salas Wright, an assistant professor of social work at the University of Texas at Austin and the lead researcher on the study. In addition, they also looked at how the rates of marijuana use have changed over time. Over the study period, again, this is from 2002 to 2013, the percentage of teens using marijuana decreased, Salas Wright told Live Science. Dropped from 4.5% of younger adolescents, is now 4.5% of the younger adolescents compared to 6% in 2002. In older adolescents, rates dropped from 26% to 22%. Young adults didn't change dramatically during that period, and older adults, as we've described earlier before on the show, has gone way up. So legalization has had the exact effect we said it would. Make it harder for kids to get a hold of marijuana, make it easier for adults to get a hold of marijuana, and take away that forbidden fruit aspect of marijuana by making it the boring drug that mom and dad might smoke. Other science coming in to us from attention. This is something we covered in our hour two the other day of how THC created by yeast could be a major development for medical marijuana advocates. Scientists announced in August that creating opioid molecules with yeast is now possible. And now, German Technical University students have published a paper showing how yeast could be used to create THC as well as CBD. Dr. Oliver Kaiser of Technical University explained that synthetic THC and CBD have been created, but many studies say they don't work as well. So making the same THC and CBD cannabis makes is probably better for medicine. The only problem is that scientists have not quite perfected the process in the way they would like. To be able to create THC from yeast out of simple sugars is probably going to take them a little more time, they say. But being able to do this would also help them circumvent some of the Schedule 1 aspects of plant-based THC and CBD. Very interesting research. This is from Attention. ATTN.com. And a story we referred to earlier in the headlines, the case of Richard Kirk in Denver, Colorado. He's the man who shot and killed his wife while she was on 911 after ingesting a marijuana edible, is now claiming not reason by guilty of intoxication. That's right. At first, it was just not guilty. Then it was not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, not guilty by reason of intoxication, claiming marijuana caused his delirium and psychotic-like symptoms. Three experts gave their professional opinions about the mental state Kirk may have been in court documents. One was Dr. Andrew Monti, a medical toxicologist from CU's School of Medicine. He says, quote, "It is my professional opinion that Mr. Kirk was intoxicated with THC, leading to delirium and psychotic-like symptoms at the time of the homicide." End quote. Another witness is Dr. Catherine Bellin. She's a clinical psychologist. She interviewed Kirk in jail for 3 days and wrote that he's vulnerable to severe distortions, is socially and emotionally withdrawn, and may feel a chronic sense of self-loathing. She says his basic personality profile is not consistent with a violent or aggressive individual and blames other factors, including stress, for his alleged actions in the case. In her assessment, she wrote, quote, "Evaluation suggests that he is prone to unraveling both cognitively and emotionally when under stress, and symptoms are likely to include features of paranoia, significant distortions in thinking, and unrestrained affect," end quote. And the third expert, Dr. Ryan Vandry, he studies the effects of cannabis and says he would, quote, "be willing to testify that individuals who consume cannabis orally may experience strong drug effects at the same time that they may have relatively low levels of THC," end quote. Richard Kirk will be back in court in December. That's a postponement from the original trial date back in October. And folks, this is a very slippery slope here if the Kirk defense is able to paint marijuana edibles as reason enough to get away with murder. That's going to be really bad for our side, given that that is one of the things that the prohibitionists want to tie to marijuana. And to have a decision of a court, especially a jury, that could be convinced that marijuana edibles is going to make someone crazy enough to kill? Well, that's right out of Harry J. Anslinger's playbook, isn't it? These are the things we're going to have to watch for. And if you ask me, Richard Kirk is guilty of murder because he shot his wife and was recorded on audio doing so. This idea of not guilty by reason of intoxication suggests that we can use this same sort of argument for a drunk driver who mows down a school bus full of nuns and orphans. No, no, no. Part of being a consumer of drugs, alcohol, marijuana, whatever they might be, includes being responsible for yourself and for your actions. We support responsible marijuana consumers. Someone who eats an edible and shoots his wife isn't a marijuana consumer. He's just a murderer who happened to consume marijuana. Speaking of the prohibitionists desperately trying to tie marijuana to any sort of harm, when we come back, we'll give you the pathetic bleatings of prohibitionists as these drug war dinosaurs sink into the tar pits of time. What are they trying to say has terribly, terribly gone wrong in Colorado and Washington? I'm still waiting for the $2 billion in social costs since they've made $200 million in taxes, but haven't heard from Kevin Sabet on that one. Also, stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll talk to Bacon Dan, get some new Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes for you. And your calls at 84-420 Radio.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is...